Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favour from the Lord. The poor use entreaties, but the rich answer roughly. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Better is a poor person who walks in his integrity than one who is crooked in speech and is a fool. Desire without knowledge is not good, and whoever makes haste with his feet misses his way. When a man's folly brings his way to ruin, his heart rages against the Lord. Wealth brings many new friends, but a poor man is deserted by his friend. A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will not escape. Many seek the favor of a generous man, and everyone is a friend to a man who gives gifts. All a poor man's brothers hate him. How much more do his friends go far from him? He pursues them with words but does not have them. Whoever gets sense loves his own soul. He who keeps understanding will discover good. A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will perish. It is not fitting for a fool to live in luxury, much less for a slave to rule over princes. Good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offence. A king's wrath is like the growling of a lion, but his favour is like dew on the grass. A foolish son is ruin to his father, and a wife's quarrelling is a continual dripping of rain. House and wealth are inherited from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. Slothfulness casts into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. Whoever keeps the commandment keeps his life. He who despises his ways will die. Whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his deed. Discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. A man of great wrath will pay the penalty, for if you deliver him, you will only have to do it again. Listen to advice and accept instruction, that you may gain wisdom in the future. Many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand. What is desired in a man is steadfast love, and a poor man is better than a liar. The fear of the Lord leads to life, and whoever has it rests satisfied. He will not be visited by harm.
Two ducks and two dogs have a total of 14 legs, true or false? Well, I sat staring at the screen for a few moments, trying to visualise these blessed animals so I could actually count the legs. And I then concluded that maybe this wasn't the evening for me to attempt an online IQ test. What is your IQ? Some of you may be members of Mensa, and you can do instant calculations of duck and animal legs. But in the end, it doesn't really matter. What really matters in life is not IQ, but wisdom. Wisdom is much more important, and it's what the book of Proverbs is all about. Wisdom is a tree of life. It is the path of blessing. It is the way to make life work. It is the life that will mark out the people of God. Never mind your IQ score, what is your wisdom score? Maybe you say, well, I don't know. You know, I've never taken a wisdom test. Well, that is what we're going to do this evening. And by the end of this talk, you will know how wise you really are. We're looking today at the main body of the book of Proverbs, the sayings in chapters 10 through to chapter 29. I'm not going to attempt a verse-by-verse exposition of 20 chapters, but instead we'll do two things. If you imagine these chapters as a city, I'm going to act as a tour guide. So first of all, I'll show you the layout of the city so that you can find your way around next time you go for a visit. And then secondly, I'll point out some of the main landmarks, showing you something of the variety that the city has to offer. So firstly then, the layout of the city, that is to say the structure of chapters 10 through to 29. These chapters are made up of several collections of sayings. So you'll see on your sheet there, I put them down, 10 verse 1 to 22 verse 16, is Solomon's first collection, and it falls into two parts. The first part is chapters 10 to 15, in which you'll see that most of the sayings are expressed as an antithesis. That is, the two halves of each saying contrast. So if you just look, for example, at chapter 10, verse 1 says, "A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother." And these antitheses, they remind us that in daily life there are just two ways to live. It's either or. It's wisdom or folly in every situation we face. These chapters lay out the ABC of wisdom. Chapter 16 through to chapter 22 then build on this. And in these chapters we begin to encounter exceptions to the basic rule of act consequence. And we see this in the sayings which are better than sayings. So for example, chapter 15 and verse 16 says, "Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble with it." So if you fear the Lord, you may well end up with little rather than great treasure, but that is saying it's still the best path to be on. Chapter 22, verse 17 to 24, 34 are the sayings of the wise. And their particular distinctive when you read them is that the reader tends to be addressed directly in the second person, i.e. you. And this reminds us that we have to make a personal response to wisdom's demands. Wisdom is saying, "Oi, you! Yes, you! I'm speaking to you. What are you going to do about this?" That is what wisdom is saying to us. And then chapters 25 through to 29 are Solomon's second collection, where there's a particular focus on the king and issues of government, money, justice, poverty. And it's a reminder that wisdom is not just about my own little personal life, but it's also about wider issues in society. So that's the basic layout of the city. The other feature of the layout is that the sayings, you've probably noticed, the sayings are not grouped together according to themes. Sometimes you do get a run of verses on the same topic, but generally you'll find that sayings on the same subject are scattered throughout the book of Proverbs. And sometimes you've got the same saying repeated in different chapters with only minor variations. Well, why is that? Why aren't all the sayings on, say, laziness, why aren't they all grouped together for easy reference in chapter 13? Well, we're not told, but one reason may be this, that the layout mirrors real life. In the Yellow Pages, all the pharmacies and all the libraries are grouped together, aren't they? They're on the same pages. But in a city, it's not like that. In a city, they're scattered all over the place. And so every day in our lives we encounter a diversity of situations and challenges in which wisdom needs to be applied. So it's not as if Mondays are Choose Your Friends Day, whereas Wednesdays is Don't Gossip Day. It's not like that. Every day issues are coming at us thick and fast. And the layout of Proverbs reflects that. So if you did take a chapter of Proverbs every day to meditate on and to integrate into your living, it would equip you for the range of wisdom challenges that you would face that day. Another reason for the layout may be that it forces us to search for wisdom as for hidden treasure, as chapter 2 verse 4 tells us to. So if you're struggling with a particular issue, you have to do your own digging to find out what wisdom in Proverbs has to say. And it also may be as well that our understanding is actually sharpened and we make different connections by having a saying next to other sayings which are different. In the same way, I guess, that you can better appreciate the redness of something red when it's put next to something black or something green, or the flavour of cauliflower soup when it's got a squirt of lemon in it. That's the layout of the city, so you can find your way around when you next visit. Let's just look now at some of the main landmarks, so the themes that you will encounter. And this tour is by no means comprehensive, but it will give you a taster. But it isn't just sightseeing. This is the wisdom test. How wise are you, really? Well, that is about to be revealed. The text begins, you'll see there, with a preliminary question about the fear of the Lord. It comes up 9 times in these chapters. For example, chapter 23, verse 17 says, "Continue in the fear of the Lord all the day." 28:14 says, "Blessed is the one who fears the Lord always." Fear of the Lord is reverence for God as the mighty creator and redeemer that he is. And it results in 2 T's. It results in us turning away from evil, as we saw in chapter 3, verse 7. And it results in us trusting in him and not in our own understanding. The 2 T's. And part of us trusting in him is that we acknowledge God's sovereignty. A number of sayings in the book speak of God's sovereign purposes. For example, chapter 21, verse 1 says, "The king's heart is a stream of water in the hand of the Lord, and he turns it wherever he wills." It may be that things are not working out for you in life at the moment, that although you're following the path of wisdom, your circumstances are not as you would like them to be. Well, God's sovereignty is such an important truth to hang on to. Now, we saw in chapter 9, verse 10, that the fear of the Lord is foundational. The fear of the Lord, it said, is the beginning of wisdom, and this is the motto of the book of Proverbs. That means if you score nothing on this first question, that is, if you don't fear the Lord, I'm afraid you actually get a 0 score for the whole test. Without this foundation, God is saying that you are not wise. And whatever you score in the rest of the test cannot compensate for that. Well, if that's you, a question might be to ask, what is actually keeping you from fearing the Lord, the God who's revealed himself in the Bible? Well, having said that, there is still plenty that you can learn from the rest of the test about how life works in God's world, so don't switch off. So we've got 10 questions. We'll cover the first 2 at some length, and then the others we'll go through much more briefly. Number 1, guard your heart. 4:23 says, "Keep or guard your heart with all vigilance, for from it flows the springs of life." What is your heart? In our culture, we think of heart and head as opposed, and you'll pick that up in John's opening prayer. So you think with your head and you feel with your heart. But in ancient Hebrew thought, the heart refers to the whole inner person. So it covers a person's will and their thought and their feeling. The heart is key. The heart is the command and control center of our lives. What goes on in our hearts, it affects the whole of our life. Because as people, we are an integrated unit. So the state of your heart, not the pumping organ, but the inner person, that will affect you physically. So 14 verse 30 says, "A tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy makes the bones rot." So if your heart is filled with envy, it will gnaw away at you from the inside out. It will stress your body and it will give you ulcers. And so it is imperative that you guard your heart. From it flow the springs of life. If you just try to walk into one of the firms here in the Wharf, you're not going to get past reception unless you've got an invitation. In fact, security is so tight that one senior employee told me this past week that he was organising an evening reception at his bank, and one CEO who had been invited got turned away by the person at reception who was on the night shift because his name wasn't on the list, a CEO, and that was that. He had to go home. But what's the security like guarding your heart? What is allowed in there? Given this is the core of our life, it should be maximum security. If something isn't on God's guest list in Proverbs, then we mustn't let it in. Well, 3 verse 5 says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart." So that can go in. 6 verse 21 says of God's commandments, "Bind them on your heart always." So they must go in as we study on God's word and meditate on it. But there are other things that we need to stop at the front desk. So 6:25 says about the adulteress, "Do not desire her beauty in your heart." So we mustn't let lustful thoughts pass reception. We can control our thought life, otherwise that command would be meaningless. Letting in lust, it's a bit like giving a member of Al-Qaeda a security pass for one of the buildings in the wharf. 23 verse 17 says, let not your heart envy sinners. 16 verse 5 says, everyone who is arrogant in heart is an abomination to the Lord. If we know what's good for us, we will take measures to ensure that envy and pride are stopped at reception. If we allow them access into our hearts, they will do untold damage to our lives. Now, one reason we may be a bit lax in security with our hearts is that our buildings have reflective glass windows. That is to say, none of us can see into another person's building. You don't know what's in my heart, and I don't know what's in your heart. But God does. 17 verse 3 says, the Lord tests hearts. 21 verse 2 says, every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the heart. So the Lord knows what we've allowed in there. And so if we're wise, we'll make sure that nothing gets in that is not on God's guest list. In a culture obsessed with image, the wise will be marked out as those who prioritise the inner person, not the outer person. Because the Lord doesn't look at appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. A person can look $1 million, but be a rosy apple which is rotten at the core. Number two, watch your mouth over the page on your sheet there. 18:21, key verse says, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. And by tongue it means, of course, what we say. Other sayings refer to our lips or our words. Proverbs has got a lot to say about the tongue because of its influence and because it's something we use every day in every situation. Such a small organ in the body, isn't it? But such phenomenal power, both for good and for evil. Physics was one of my least favourite subjects at school, and perhaps if I'd paid more attention, I would have understood this, but I've never really understood how the rudder on a boat works. It has an influence which seems completely disproportionate to its tiny size. I mean, the rudder on a rowing eight is about the size of my hand, and yet that little rudder can steer this boat with eight beefy guys sitting in it. Well, likewise, the tongue is small, but it is immensely powerful. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Wisdom recognises that power and uses it for good. How can the tongue be used for good? Well, 12:25 says, anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. It's true, isn't it? Someone may be weighed down with sorrow, having a really bad day, but with a few words, you can make their day. A kind word, an encouragement, a reminder of some truth in the Bible. Or 15 verse 1 says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So a gentle, gracious comment, it can diffuse a volatile situation at work, at home, whereas reacting with harsh words, it has completely the opposite effect and produces an explosion. Wonder if you've experienced that. I've lost count of how often I've looked back on a situation with bomb damage all around me, and I thought, if only I had said this instead of that, the storm would have blown over, and instead I'm sitting here on a pile of debris from hurricane damage. Or 24 verse 26 says, whoever gives an honest answer kisses the lips. How many words spoken each day are dishonest? Exaggerating, deceiving, twisting, lying, fabricating. Such a slap in the face. Whereas an honest answer is like giving someone a kiss. The wise give kisses to whoever they meet. But don't quote that one out of context. And of course, our words give life in an ultimate sense as we share the gospel. It's just words. But words which can change someone's eternal future. Now, conversely, the tongue can be used destructively. So 18 verse 8 says, the words of a whisperer, that is a gossip, are like delicious morsels. People love to hear gossip, don't they? But it is so destructive. 11 verse 9 says, with his mouth the godless man would destroy his neighbour. Well, you'll never guess what I heard. You'll never guess what I've heard. And on it goes. And many a workplace would be as silent as a library, wouldn't it, if gossip was banned. But equally harmful is flattery. Flattery is when we tell people how great they are just so that we can get them to do what we want them to do. So 29:5 says, a man who flatters his neighbour spreads a net for his feet. 18 verse 7 sums this up by saying, a fool's mouth is his ruin. A fool's mouth is his ruin. So it destroys not just other people, but it destroys him himself as well, or herself. People may debate gun laws, but you should need a license for carrying a tongue, because the tongue is such a dangerous weapon. So how can we become more responsible tongue owners? Well, here are some hot tips. 13 verse 3 says, whoever guards his mouth preserves his life. Guard your lips. With our hearts, we've been saying, we need security to stop destructive forces getting in. But with our mouth, we need security to stop destructive forces getting out. We should only let out what is loving and what is kind. 15:28 says, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. Basically, that's saying, think before you speak. Think before you speak. How often I've caused damage only because I've engaged my brain after I've spoken, and then the words are out and it's too late. And don't be too quick to speak. 29 verse 20 says, do you see a man who is hasty in his words? There's more hope for a fool than for him. And don't say too much. 10 verse 19 says, when words are many, transgression is not lacking, but whoever restrains his lips is prudent. How many stupid, hurtful things I've said just because I didn't know when to shut up. And we need to use our ears as much as we use our tongues. Two ears, one mouth, there's a reason. 18 verse 2 says, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. 18 verse 13 says, if one gives an answer before he hears, it is his folly and his shame. So it's saying the wise are good listeners, and there are plenty of proverbs dealing in particular with listening to advice. So watch your mouth. I wonder how you're doing in the wisdom test so far. We're now going to run through the remaining 8 questions much more briefly. So number 3, work with integrity. 11 verse 1 says, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. A false balance, a false weight, it refers to dodgy dealing, dodgy weighing scales, which shortchanged people. So people thought they were getting a kilo of fish, and instead they only got 700 grams for their money. Is the Lord bothered? Well, this says the Lord hates it. He is passionate about integrity at work. There's no sacred secular divide in God's world. That this verse, 11 verse 1, is on the wall in Greenwich Market is exactly the right place to have it. We need to take God into the marketplace, into the workplace with us. The way that a Christian runs a stall in Greenwich Market, it should be distinctive, as also the way that a Christian works as an accountant and a lawyer and a doctor and a teacher and an IT technician and so on. How we operate at work Monday to Friday really matters to God. We should be good employees. Honest, hard-working, not cheating our employer. You see, integrity at work, it is not just an issue for the sock gen trader. Number 4, honour your government. 24 verse 21 says, have I missed that off the sheet? Choose your friend. Oh, I've missed off the sheet. Okay, that should be in there. Honour your government. 24:21 says, my son, fear the Lord and the king, and do not join with those who do otherwise. So we're to fear and honour not just the Lord, but we're also to fear and honour the rulers of our country, that is the government. We are to submit to their authority. And we're only to disobey when commanded to do something God forbids, or when we're forbidden to do something that God commands. So we should pay our taxes, we should obey the laws, we should observe proper process for bringing about change. In short, we should be not only good employees, but we should be good citizens. 29 verse 4 says, "By justice a king builds up the land." And 29:14, that if a king faithfully judges the poor, his throne will be established forever. So if you're involved in governing yourself, well, social justice must be on your agenda if you're a councillor or whatever. It's essential to good government. And if you're a voter, then this should be on your agenda. And it means that we need to pray for those who rule over us, that they would be wise and that they would govern justly. Number five, unless I've got my counting wrong here, choose your friends. We're back on the sheet. Choose your friends. 13 verse 20 says, "Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm." That's saying that those we make our companions on our journey through this world will have an influence on us, whether it be for good or for evil. Their character and their example will shape us as people. So, for example, 22 verse 24 says, "Make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare." Parents are rightly concerned, aren't they? Parents are rightly concerned about who their children hang out with, lest they are led astray. But that we are older does not make us immune from the influence of other people. So choose your friends carefully. What are the qualities of a friend? Well, 17 verse 17 says a friend loves at all times. So not just a fair weather friend, there for the other person, even when the other person perhaps is not much fun to be with at the moment because they're struggling with so many problems in their life. 27 verse 6 says that faithful are the wounds of a friend, profuse are the kisses of an enemy. So a good friend will tell you when you're doing something wrong. They'll pick you up on it because they love you. When a rebuke in love is needed, they won't pull their punches if they're a friend. With friendship, quality is better than quantity. In fact, 18 verse 24 warns us, Facebook fans take note, that a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Well, are you such a friend to somebody else? And do you have such a friend yourself? Because if so, one of those is worth 100 so-called friends on Facebook. Number six, sort out your laziness. The sluggard features prominently in the book of Proverbs. There's a wonderful picture of the sluggard in 26:14, which says, "As a door turns on its hinges, so does the sluggard on his bed." And so the call in chapter 6 verse 9, "How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep?" And the lazy person is told to learn a lesson from nature in chapter 6 verse 6. "Go to the ant, O sluggard, consider her ways and be wise." The column of ants carrying huge bits of leaves backwards and forwards to their nest is a rebuke to the lazy bones. 13:4 says, "The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied." So the sluggard dreams, has lots of good intentions, but doesn't take the initiative to actually make things happen. And as a result, well, their life is a mess. 15:19 says, "The way of a sluggard is like a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a level highway." So their affairs, their life is just a tangle, it's a mess. Now we may think that laziness is hardly an issue for people like ourselves, for hard-working young professionals or mothers at home. But in his book on Proverbs, Bill Hybels warns of what he calls selective sluggardliness. Selective sluggardliness. So compartments of our lives where laziness reigns. Some of the examples he gives: the husband who wins awards at work but who fails miserably to respond to the emotional needs of his wife and his children. The mother who pours herself out on the home front and on the job, but who continually neglects her relationship with God. Those who fill their time and their diaries with people, but who never tend the soil of their own interior lives. Selective sluggardliness. If you're married, the next one is for you. Number 7, cultivate your marriage. 21:19 says, "It is better to live in a desert land than with a quarrelsome and fretful woman." If you see tendencies in yourself to be a nag and a worrier, do deal with it for the sake of your marriage. But husbands, do in turn take to heart the many warnings in Proverbs about being unfaithful. 5:18 says, "Rejoice in the wife of your youth. Be intoxicated always in her love." And 6:32 warns that he who commits adultery destroys himself. And we need look no further than the headlines this past week to see the truth of that. Chief Constable of Greater Manchester found dead on a mountain, father of three, believed to have committed suicide because he was troubled by a series of affairs, and he was concerned that his tangled private life was unravelling. Same week, Governor of New York, married with three daughters, resigns after a sex scandal in a $5,500 an hour international call girl ring. An abrupt end to this guy's political career, a rising star who seemed destined for the White House, his life in tatters. If you're married, cultivate your marriage. And if you have children, discipline your children. It's the next one, 13:24, says, "Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him." It's one of the many proverbs about parental discipline. Parenting in Proverbs is about teaching children the way of discipline, the way of wisdom, and discipline is part of that. As God disciplines those that he loves, so we will discipline our children if we love them. And these verses, when you look them up, they certainly imply something more than just words in discipline. Our culture finds it difficult, doesn't it, to distinguish smacking from child cruelty and child abuse. In Sweden, smacking is already illegal. But in a clash between God and government, we need to obey God. The next one on the list there has a bearing on this. Control yourself. 25:28 says, "A man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls." So defenseless, if exposed to every attack of the enemy. Taking out your frustrations on your children, that is not loving discipline. Self-control is essential. But it's essential not just to being a parent, but to so much of the wise life in Proverbs. To having a controlled thought life, words, drinking, and so on. And if you've got a short fuse, you need to deal with it. 14:29 says, "Whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who has a hasty temper exalts folly." True strength is seen in self-control. In fact, 16:32 says, "Whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." And finally there, care for the poor. 14:21 says, "Blessed is he who is generous to the poor." But as our time is gone, we're going to pick this one up next time in Proverbs. Well, that's a taster. How have you done in the wisdom test? What is your score? How wise are you really? Perhaps you got no score. Well, given what is at stake, wouldn't the next Christianity Explored course make sense to actually find out more about this Lord God, the fear of whom we're told is the very first step in wisdom? Perhaps you got a low score. Well, chapter 28, verse 13 urges us not to conceal our transgressions, our sins, our failures, but rather to confess them and to forsake them. Perhaps you've scored well in some areas, but you got nothing in other areas. Well, do work on your weak areas prayerfully. Those couple of questions about marriage and children, they may not have been relevant to your current life situation, but those aside, this isn't like an exam which says answer any two questions. You cannot just play to your strengths when it comes to wisdom. The wise person must be an all-rounder. This isn't talking about gifting here, this is talking about character. Perhaps you scored really highly. Well, if so, congratulations. But if you are truly wise, you'll be humble about it. And you'll recognise that any wisdom that you do have actually comes from God in the first place, and there is always room for further growth in wisdom. And as for the top score, well, Jesus, of course, is the only one who has ever got it all right. The prize for the perfectly wise person goes to him. And those who are wise look to his example, but they also trust in his sin-bearing death for their forgiveness and for their acceptance by God. Well, let's pause to pray, to reflect on what we've heard in Proverbs. And then when the music starts, we'll sing this song of recommitment. All that I am, I lay before you. But firstly, let's pause and pray in the quietness of our own minds and hearts.